Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. A major honor was bestowed on former Missouri Senator John Danforth last night. He received the National Churchill Museum's Churchill Leadership Medal in recognition of Danforth's half-century of state, national, and international public service. Among those honoring him, Lord Alan Watson, a member of the British House of Lords and noted Churchill historian. Lord Watson joins me in studio. It's so nice to have you with us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I know last night you must have had one eye on the ceremony honoring Senator Danforth and also on the British election results. What do you make of it?
Well, it is an extraordinary outcome. And, of course, for Theresa May, the Prime Minister, it's a devastating result, in large part because this was her election. It wasn't a necessary election. The term had not run out. And she went for it because she had a 20-point lead in the polls. And I think she thought, looking at the leader of the Labour Party, that you don't look a gift horse in the mouth, and she'd go for it. The official reason that she gave was that she wanted a mandate for the Brexit negotiations. Actually, she hardly talked about Brexit during the campaign. But it's devastating for her. And, of course, her leadership now must be under question. And there'll be a lot of hungry people around in the Tory leadership who will be thinking very hard about what their next moves are.
Well, her next move is to try to form a government. Apparently, she has some allies in this regard in Northern Ireland.
Well, you know, the fact is she is short, critically short, of an overall majority in the House of Commons. So she has to add some seats. And the easiest way, and indeed the traditional way for the Tory party, is to call on the Ulster Unionists. There is a real problem because the Ulster Unionists lost ground in the Northern Irish elections just recently, so they're weaker than they were. Secondly, they were very much in favour of Brexit, and one of the reasons that they supported Brexit was they favoured a return to a hard border between North and South Ireland. And one of the very few details that Theresa May has let out about her approach to Brexit is that she agrees with the view of the EU negotiators as well, that we mustn't have a return to a hard border between North and South Ireland. So she's really faced with many conundrums tomorrow.
Nothing seems easy anymore, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Was this vote yesterday in any sense another referendum on Brexit? Were people making known their displeasure with the earlier vote?
I think that's a very interesting question. You can't give a categorical answer to that, but there is evidence that people have doubts. And I think there was irritation that during an election which apparently was to be about Brexit, pretty well nothing emerged in terms of the negotiating strategy of the government. So I think there was unease, and what this election certainly has not been is a mandate for a hard Brexit. And she will find, if she stays on, she will find that Parliament will play an increasingly important role in the negotiations. And I think there's quite a clear majority in my house, anyway, in the House of Lords, in favour of retaining access to the single market and all the rest of it.
The American audience might not fully understand what a hard Brexit is. What does that mean?
I don't think we understand it either. But, I mean, I suppose it really means that, to use another of the mantras that came out, that no deal is better than a bad deal. But again, it's one of those phrases you don't know what it means. Incidentally, there was one other mantra that Prime Minister used during the campaign, which I think was lovely. She kept on saying, what we want is a government that is strong and stable. And of course, this was meant to be a self-description. And this became so repetitive that in the end, one of the columnists, I think in the Times, said, where have we heard that mantra before? I know. It was the White Star Line in 1912.
Oh, we all remember what that meant.
Indeed.
A certain iceberg and a certain,
yes.
certain
yeah.
unsinkable ship.
Yeah.
I can't help but notice you have a big smile on your face. As a Labour leader, I suppose you get some satisfaction.
Well, Liberal Democrat. Democrat.
Right.
I'm not Labour. Right. But I'm pleased, I have to say, that First of all, that she didn't win the overwhelming majority that seemed likely at the beginning of the campaign. Mm-hmm. Remember, she had a 20-point lead. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think that would have been good for British democracy, for British politics, or indeed for the negotiations now with the European Union. So I'm pleased that didn't happen. The one thing from which she can draw comfort, actually, is that the Tory party in Scotland saw a bit of a renaissance. And there are quite a few Tory MPs now back in Scotland, and the SNP, the Scottish Nationalists, had a setback. If she hadn't won those seats in Scotland, she wouldn't be our Prime Minister today.
What does all of this mean for this country?
For the United States?
For the United States.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Instinctively, the British people feel, and all the polls have always shown this, that we talk about the special relationship, but there is an affection and a familiarity with the United States amongst the British people, which is unique. And I remember a polling situation during an earlier presidency when American presidential policies were very unpopular, and they were as unpopular in Britain as they were in Germany and France. But the difference was that in Germany and France, it wasn't just the policies that were unpopular. It was the United States that was unpopular. In the UK, it's different. The policies may be very unpopular, and certainly Donald Trump is a challenge. But we're fond of the relationship. We believe in the relationship. And it is very close, and it will continue.
Well, that is certainly good to hear. There are some signs that we're all familiar with that we'll talk about in a moment, that there is some displeasure, I think, among some quarters in your country with the current administration. But let me get to some other things that are happening in your country today that are of importance. Do you feel in any sense under siege? The latest incidents with regard to London Bridge and, of course, the horrible incident in Manchester – these things aren't stopping. They seem to be increasing all over Europe.
And to share with you, I was personally extremely fortunate because the attack on Westminster Bridge, you know, crossing towards the Palace of Westminster, I'd arrived at around 2:30 at Waterloo Station. My plan was to get a taxi, pick up some papers at the House of Lords, and then go on to my office in Trafalgar Square. I realized I was running a little late, so instead of turning right for the taxi rank, I turned left and went down the underground. Mm. I would have been on the bridge at about 2:35, which is when it all happened. Mm. And I think I only tell that personal incident because people are having to become accustomed to the idea of the fragility of life around you. And, of course, you do start to look in a different way. I mean, I use the underground and if I see a suitcase sitting there, you know, and somebody doesn't seem to own it or somebody owns it and gets off but leaves the suitcase, you know, all the alarm bells go off. And I think we have to get used to that idea. Under siege, no, I don't think so. And fortunately, in general terms, the relationship between the Islamic community in Britain and, you know, the rest of the community is very good. The tragedy about these incidents, and particularly the latest one in London, but also Manchester, is that these jihadists are deliberately targeting young people, the softest of targets, and they seem to be motivated by a fury that these people are enjoying themselves and are free. And that's a murderous thing, and it was awful with the attack in London, London Bridge, that after they crashed the van, you know, they got out and they went into pubs and restaurants and started knifing people. Mm. Terrible.
The fact that they're using things like trucks and vans now as a weapon makes it all the more frightening.
Very important, that, because these are not high-tech attacks. And, of course, they're not using guns. Mm. And but, of course, we are going to face a problem now. We already are with the level of policing. And some criticism of reductions and cuts to the police force may have been a factor in this election. I think that's possible. But we also, of course, now have armed police. And I find it, I mean, personally, you know, when I go to the House of Lords and I go to the Peers entrance, it's been like that now for years, but I do a double take every time I go there and I see three policemen with automatic weapons and machine guns and so on. It's not what we associate either with the police or with Parliament.
Traveling in Europe and the Middle East these days is so different because that's very, very typical. We have to take a break. Let's do that now. I'm talking with Lord Alan Watson, a member of the British Parliament. He's a member of the House of Lords, and he's here for a special event last night honoring former Missouri Senator John Danforth. We'll come back and talk about that and other things taking place in his country at the present time. We'll do that in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Lord Watson. Tell us about last night. Senator Danforth holds a very special place in Missouri history and in the hearts of many Missourians. Why was he honored?
Well, he was honored because of who he is and what he's done. Mm-hmm. And I think a recognition of the importance of what he is calling for. Because what he is saying is that the United States has got to not be alone, but to develop its international relations. They are critically important. America can't be alone. And secondly, that within America, there has to be greater dialogue between political positions and extremes. And I was very impressed by his speech, and it ended with a challenge to Westminster College that if you were really going to focus attention on the need to build consensus and dialogue, where better to do it than actually at the college where Churchill made his great appeal in 1946.
The Great Iron Curtain speech.
The Great Iron Curtain speech. And I was very honored as well because they made me a Churchill Fellow at the college because of the work I did on the Fulton speech and the book. And I just feel it's an extraordinary place. And I've been there several times now, and just turning off that highway, you know, and suddenly finding yourself driving to Fulton, and there's this Wren Church, which was blitzed in 1940 and brought across. Only the Americans would have done that, of course. Brought it across the Atlantic, brought it halfway across America, and rebuilt it there. It's an extraordinary memorial, really, to Winston. But it's Winston's relevance to the future rather than just the memory of the past.
Well, speaking of Winston, I'll call him Winston, if you will. How do you think he might be reacting today to some of the things going on in our world?
I think he'd be very, very, very concerned. And the two speeches he made in 46 really set the foundations for a lot of what we've taken for granted, things which led in the end to NATO and the defense community, and also, of course, the coal and steel community and the Marshall Plan and all that. And we've maybe got rather lazy in taking all that for granted. And if we destroy that sense of an international community, we're going to find it very hard to rebuild it. So I think he would be unhappy about that. He would also be very unhappy about the decision to hold a referendum on Brexit. We can't know what he would have said or done, but what is quite clear is he believed that Parliament was sovereign, and because Parliament was sovereign, you don't hand the difficult decisions out to the general population in a referendum. They vote in an election for a Parliament, and it's the job of the Parliament to take the decisions.
He, of course, reflects a different time and a different attitude in many ways, as does Senator Danforth. You know, when I think of him, I think of a different time in American politics. I mean, he goes back to a time of more collegiality in our Congress. He and Senator Eagleton, a Democrat, worked together very, very well. That doesn't seem to be happening anymore. Were there any references to that sort of thing last night?
Oh, in his speech, very definitely. Yeah. And what was interesting about last night was this drama that was unfolding with the British election at exactly the same time. Because after all, the Prime Minister went to the country because she didn't want dialogue. She actually said, I don't want Parliament getting involved in this situation with Brexit. And she wanted an overwhelming majority. Well, she has not got it. And now she's going to be forced into dialogue, not just with the Ulster Unionists, but across the board in the House of Commons. You say across the aisle, we say, you know, on the other side of the House.
Well, he, again, represents a time where it's absent now, if you will. What is the general attitude in your country toward the current administration?
Well, there is an upcoming issue, of course, which is about the state visit, and we'll have to see what happens about that. The invitation was from Her Majesty the Queen, so it's very unlikely to be rescinded. But I think certainly in the political class, there was real disappointment about President Trump's visit to Brussels, because he went there and he wagged his finger and he lectured them on not spending enough on defence. And I personally agree with that. And Britain, I'm glad to say, does spend more than 2% of GDP on defence. And we work very closely with the United States. But he chose not to confirm America's commitment to Article 5 of NATO, which is that an attack on one is an attack on all. And that left great uncertainty, I think. It also robbed him of an opportunity which could have been used to say that NATO has to rethink its purpose in some ways. And one of the ways we need to rethink is the attitude towards the defeat of terrorism. I mean, the Soviet Union isn't there any longer, but terrorism most certainly is. And how we tackle that is something I think very urgent now.
Yeah. The president also publicly spoke out against the Muslim mayor of London.
He
Sadiq
tweeted.
Khan. Well, of course he tweeted. Sadiq Khan.
Yes.
How was that received?
Badly.
Yeah.
And badly across all the parties. And indeed, if you read the text of the speech of the mayor and then the two tweets from the president quite clearly took the quotation he used entirely out of context. And he was suggesting explicitly that somehow the mayor was complacent about terrorism, didn't think it was a big issue. Well, of course it's a big issue. So if I had to make a friendly constitutional proposal in this country, I would say, well, why don't you ensure that the president ceases tweeting? It would stabilize his presidency.
Well, I think somebody got to him yesterday during the testimony before Congress of former FBI Director Comey. Are people paying attention to that in your country?
It's difficult. I mean, I happened to be here, so I was looking at a lot of the coverage.
You couldn't avoid it.
And, of course, you have a very different system. But at the heart of the issue seems to be the independence of different branches of the Constitution and institutions defending the Constitution. And there is a great admiration in Britain for the United States Constitution. I mean, you achieved it by having a war of independence with us.
But, it was in all the papers, yes, I remember that.
That's right. But, you know, there's a lot of admiration, and people are watching that. And nobody wants the presidency of the United States to get into real difficulties and so on, because it will affect the status and prestige and the ability of the United States to influence things. But I agree very much with what Jack Danforth was saying in his speech last night. America can't be alone. America is at risk alone. And it's very important that it renews and maintains and nurtures its international relationships.
Yeah. I think it's the Chinese who say we live in interesting times.
That's
and
right.
We certainly are doing that. Lord Alan Watson, I want to thank you so much for being with us. You are, of course, a member of the House of Lords in Britain, here for an event last night honoring John Danforth with a very, very nice Churchill Award from Westminster College. Thank you so much for being with us, sir.
Thank you.
Great to have you. Enjoy your time here in St. Louis. So this is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.